This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Hey, everybody. So how often have you found yourself wandering into the bookstore hoping to find something to make you feel better? So you make a beeline over to the self-help section, which, by the way, there's a funny scene all about that in the Sex and the City movie that we might talk about. But you pull these books out and you're looking at them and you're just not sure, what does this all mean? What does self-help mean? And is it really helping me? So we have got Gail Brenner, PhD psychologist. She has this book. The name of this book is brilliant. The End of Self-Help, Discovering Peace and Happiness Right at the Heart of Your Messy, Scary, Brilliant Life. Hey, Gail, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Lisa?
I am doing great. So, you know, you can see the scene. Someone is in need, and so they end up at the bookstore, and they end up looking in the self-help section. So what is, first of all, I know you're not saying, okay, books can't help, but explain to me why constantly with this self-help, we feel like we're broken somehow.
Yes, absolutely. So you're right. Books can help, and retreats and workshops and like-minded friends, all of those things can help. So I'm not saying don't do any of those things. But what I do invite people to do is question this concept of self-help and what it actually means. And what it means is that there's an assumption that we're a broken or damaged self that needs help and that needs to be fixed and it needs something that we don't already have. And that's the problem I have with self-help, that it keeps us searching outside ourselves to get that thing or hear the right insight that's finally going to make it all right. Whereas when we learn to look inside and our own experience in the moment, we find that we can discover peace anytime, anywhere, no matter what is happening. And that's what this book is about.
Can you give me an example of when maybe that type of thinking has helped you?
Yes, absolutely. So for me, a lot of what's guided my life in the past is fear. So I would feel afraid to, say, write a book, for example, which is what happened for many years. And my mind would convince myself that I couldn't do it and that I'd be criticized if I did it. And I was in a complete mindset that was telling me no, that I couldn't accomplish this thing that was really in my heart to do. And so the process that I went through was to really recognize these thoughts, that what they are, that they're thoughts that really aren't telling me anything that's true. They're telling me scary stories about what might happen, but not about what's actually true. And that when I didn't pay any attention to those stories and I stayed with what I knew to be true in my own heart, then things began to move forward for me. We tell ourselves all kinds of stories in our minds about the past, about how we've been damaged or wounded, about what people should do or shouldn't do, expectation. We want things to be different than they are. And that is a mindset that's a source of a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is yes, you changed your mindset, but I'm sure even after you did that, it wasn't some easy road, which is why you talk about at the heart of your messy, scary, brilliant life, because you constantly have to keep doing this, right, in order to keep moving forward.
Well, it's a moment-by-moment opportunity that we have. So I wouldn't say, oh, you'll never feel fear again, or you'll never feel a sense of inadequacy again, because these are conditioned habits and conditioned patterns that just come up. It's in our programming, and we all have our own version of that, and we pretty much know what they are, these patterns and habits that we get ourselves into and just play out automatically. They're very conditioned, and they come up. So they happen. But the question then is what to do in the moment so that you're not caught in them, because those patterns are not your true self. They're not your reality. They're not who you really are, but we tend to believe them. So when we can stop and take a breath and just see what thoughts are arising and work our way through so that we can say, wow, that thought does not really define me. It's not serving me. It's not helping me move forward, or it's not an expression of who I really am. Then we can learn how to put those thoughts to the side so that we can be free in the moment. So it's not a practice, like it's a drag. Oh, I have to do this every moment. It becomes a joy because in every moment you can find your way to peace and happiness, and it's absolutely possible.
Now, doesn't that sound good, everyone? It really, I mean, and this doesn't have to be a horrible thing. Thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to take so much time. It's really not. It's as easy as you know, switching your mindset. Now, there was something written. It's actually right in the beginning of the book, and this to me was brilliant. So I want to read this. If we don't have to suffer, why do we? Why don't we just know how to be okay? Can you talk on that a little bit?
Yes. We're not taught to be okay. We're taught that there's something wrong. We're not, you know, this possibility of peace and happiness in any moment is so available. But if our teachers don't know it in our schools, we can't teach it to our kids. Our society reinforces this idea that we need to have more to feel okay. We need to buy this or do that. And it doesn't support this sense of just being okay as we are right now. So we're not used to that way of thinking. That's why this, what I write about in this book, it's not radical, and it is at the same time. It's radical to the mind that lives in lack, that thinks we're not good enough, and that thinks that things aren't okay, lives in this constant sense of anxiety, which was my experience for a long time. But the reality is that we are, the essence of who we are is absolutely okay. And so that's what's there to be discovered.
You know, and someone who really embodies this, and he's given me the stink eye for putting him on the spot, but is my producer, Remy, because he's going through a lot right now, but I've never met somebody who lives more in the present moment than Remy. Remy, is any of this sort of hitting home with you?
It's definitely hitting home. I'm trying not to choke up. But no, it's all about, for me, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and knowing that everything is going to be positive. Everything's going to work out okay. Everything's going terribly wrong, but it's going to be okay.
Well, with this particular way of being that we're speaking about here, it doesn't mean that bad events don't happen in our lives. It doesn't mean that there's not loss or things that bring up sadness in us. Life is life, and that there's a richness to it. But it's really about how we meet life. And sometimes life is painful. It brings us things that are situations that are painful. And so our job then is to be with ourselves through that, to allow the pain and not to avoid it, not to wallow in it either, but to find that middle ground where we go, okay, this is what's happening. This is how I feel. There's a certain reality to it, and not to push it away or make it any different. These things, when difficult things happen in our lives and we experience these challenges, it's a process to go through. There are seeds being planted. Things have to fall away to make space for new things to come. And when we let go more and more and don't hold on to how things should be or what shouldn't have happened, then the process really unfolds in its own time quite beautifully.
Yeah, that was something that the whole letting go of control, because that's a really big part of sometimes why I think people suffer so much, is because the thought of releasing and letting go, it just terrifies them.
It's hard.
It's terrifying. Yeah. It's resisting. You know, it's resisting. It's like, oh, I want it this way. I don't. It's like reality gives you what it gives you. It just has kind of a mind of its own. It life unfolds without us doing anything. If we were completely out of the way, our minds and what we want and what we don't want, life just unfolds. And then we come in with our preferences and our desires, and I want it this way, and I expect it that way, and it shouldn't have happened this way. That's where we get in trouble, because those are all forms of resistance to what is. But when we give a wholehearted yes to what is, not that we like it or that we, you know, put up with bad things happening to us. It's just a yes, this is how it is. And in this fullness of what's happening now, this is how I'm going to move forward.
Yep, that's how everything flows. And I've told this story before, I think, but I think it's a perfect example of what we're talking about. And there was a time when I was in one of my umpteen hospital stays that I had, and I was in severe pain and no one was coming. I was in the ER, and it would just rise and fall. The pain would literally, my body would rise up and it would fall. And no one was coming. And I remember thinking, doesn't matter how many times I press this, there's no one coming at this moment. So what I did was decided to, as best I could, make friends with the rise and fall of the pain and literally go into it. And so there was a release of saying, okay, you're here. I can't escape you. So if we're going to rise and fall, we're going to rise and fall together. And that's how I got through that moment, those moments of physical pain. And I understand, you know, there's emotional pain and psychological pain, different types of pain.
Yes. Did that change the experience for you, just befriend it in that way?
It did. It did, because in that moment, I realized I can do nothing other than make friends or try and release control of what is happening to my body at the moment. All I had control of was my mind.
It's so brilliant what that insight that, you know, you would just want to say thank you for that happening to come at that moment to just make friends with it, because that was the insight that really freed you. And this is the important point, that it doesn't mean the pain goes away, but it means that you have a completely different relationship to it that supports you through it, and that doesn't feed it. It just is this flow with it instead.
Mm-hmm. And somewhere,
and it's the same with emotional pain.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You had said at some point that you had a quote functional life, but that you were plagued by all of these things, anxiety and relationship issues and confusion. And I'm sure that rings true with a lot of people that are listening right now. What did you mean by functional life?
Oh, it was a normal life. I'm a psychologist. I had a psychotherapy practice and friends and, you know, relationships, and, you know, I had enough money. You know, and if you look at it from the outside, it was a wonderful life that many people would want to have. But something in it didn't feel right to me. And it wasn't about all those things. It wasn't about the work or the friends or anything like that. It was about the sense of myself of not being okay. And that's what needed to be explored. That sense of anxiety that I woke up with every morning. And I'm sure some people listening can identify with that, that you wake up and before you even open your eyes, you're just hit with this sense of dread. That's how I used to wake up every morning. Mm. And then I learned to meet that dread, just to feel it, to not go into the story around it, to not try to figure it out, but just, as you were saying, with your physical pain, to just be with it, flow with it, know how it is in my body. And then one day I woke up and I realized that I hadn't felt that in a long time. It just kind of vanished on its own. And it appears every now and then, but I absolutely know what to do with it. I've just learned the value of meeting experience just as it appears and not resisting it, not fighting it, not having a war with my own experience. And that creates a tremendous amount of peace.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gail, I imagine with the title, you know, The End of Self-Help, you probably got a fair amount of flack from people saying, what about Dale Carnegie? What about Napoleon Hill? Come on.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that when they say, and by the way, if you don't know who either of those authors are, please look them up. I'm talking to my listeners. I know, you know, how do you respond to that?
Well, so it's called The End of Self-Help, but it doesn't mean that some of these strategies don't help. It means that it invites us to look at our identity of who we are, who we think we are. So if it helps to, you know, have a gratitude practice every day to think about things you're grateful for, and if that truly helps you to, you know, live a happier life and feel better about your relationships, that's great, you know, and I completely support that. But what I find is these practices aren't sustainable. We start out, and I know this from my own experience, you start out with the best of intentions, you know, you're going to do your gratitude practice every day and or change your thoughts or, you know, make yourself, you know, think more positively. But these things I have found are not sustainable. because they're inviting us to be different than we are. They're inviting us to change, to become something different than we are already. And that's a misunderstanding about our own identities. Who we are is this peace that's available when we let go of our thoughts and we don't buy into our feelings. And when we recognize that we are really greater than any of that, we're not a limited personal self with ideas about what shouldn't happen. When we let all of that mental stuff go, we're just here, we're present, we're being, we're peace, we're not in resistance to anything. This is the experience of life that's always here at the heart of every moment.
Yeah, and sometimes too, I mean, I understand what you're saying when people say, I'm going to do this gratitude practice, or I'm going to do this meditation practice. And sometimes if they don't live up to the standard that they've set for themselves of I'm going to do this every day,
yeah,
then that sort of gets people to backpedal. They get angry at themselves, or they think, oh, you did it again. You didn't keep up with your practice.
Exactly. And that, and what is that moment like when you go, oh, I didn't meditate, you know, oh, I'm not good at this, or I fell short this time, I fell off the wagon. That's a moment of self-criticism. And that's a moment where it's possible to investigate, where the mind just gloms onto those thoughts like, oh, I'm not good enough, I didn't do it right, I should have done it better. Our minds can be very harsh when we believe those thoughts. And so that's what's happening in that moment. But if we release our attention away from those self-critical thoughts, and we just notice that we're here, there's an aliveness here, there's a peace that's here, there's a sense of being okay, even though those thoughts might be running. But if you don't put your energy and attention into the content of those thoughts, if you don't believe them, if you just think of them like blah, 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 happening in your mind, they don't become real for you. And then you realize you're quite okay. You're able to live. You're able to function. You might even be more clear about the decisions you need to make in your life, because you're not, you don't have all that interference from all those negative conditioned patterns.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense of just being here and okay that frees us to be available to life, available to our relationships, available to the truth of the moment, available to just to respond to things as they are.
And I notice it with a lot of your chapters, actually, the title of this chapter makes me laugh. Tell everybody what it means to show up ripe and ready. What is that?
Yes. Showing up ripe and ready means that this way of thinking or way of being that we're talking about here, for many of us, it is radical because it goes against the grain of everything we've been told, of everything we think about ourselves, of everything we've lived for the past X number of decades. And so we have to show up open. We have to be willing to question everything about our ideas about ourselves, how the world works, our ideas about other people and what they should and shouldn't do, all our ideas about relationships. We're invited to leave not one stone unturned in investigating our own experience to see what's true. So as a psychologist, somebody might come in and say to me, oh, I'm depressed. And to me, that's not a diagnosis or a label. That's a starting point, because I want to know, what do you mean by depressed? Like, what is happening in your direct experience that you're labeling as depressed? What are the thoughts that you're believing? How do you feel in your body? What other emotions are arising? Like, I want to analyze it to the nth degree. Like, what is this thing? I want to know what it is. And once you know, you go, oh, here's this negative thought arising and I'm believing it. Here's these strong sensations in my body. Then you can begin to flow with that, and you don't have to make that your reality.
So you sort of have to have a curiosity about, where is this all coming from? What does it all mean? Right?
A curiosity about all of it. Where is it coming from? What does it mean? What is it? What am I believing to be true that may or may not actually be true. And I talk also about a certain humility, and not to, we want to look good, we want to feel good about ourselves. And even that I want to put up for grabs, because I know in my own experience, I had to look at some ways that I was arrogant or that I felt entitled in the world. And, you know, to look at that stuff, I had to be very humble and say, okay, I'm willing to look at all of it because I want to be free of it. So that kind of fire inside to really want to know the truth of our experience, that's what really serves.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, since, you're a psychologist, do you believe that the social media explosion is actually helping or hurting us when it comes to how we feel about ourselves?
Well, there's this phenomenon of FOMO. I don't know if anybody has heard of that, fear of missing out. And when you read all these exciting things in Facebook that everybody else is doing, because of course they pick the most exciting things they've ever done to post in Facebook, and then you feel like you're missing out, or you feel like there's something going on that you haven't been included in, that certainly doesn't serve. But again, that becomes an opportunity. If that's the case, if someone is able to be triggered by somebody else's Facebook post, then that's an opportunity to look within and go, wow, what thoughts just came up? What clenched in my body when I read about that exciting thing that other person did that made me feel like there's something wrong with me or that I'm missing something? So every moment offers an opportunity for this investigation. And I would say social media does offer that. It has its good side. I know people who have actually met in person through social media, and there are wonderful connections that can happen. So it has a good side and a challenging side. But every time we get triggered by something is an opportunity to say, okay, I really want to know how I can be free in this moment. And it's absolutely possible for that to happen. And I know that because this is how I live. I speak from my own experience.
We're talking to Gail Brenner, author of The End of Self-Help, Discovering Peace and Happiness, right at the heart of your messy, scary, brilliant life. And we have come to the time that we love to call the RL3, Real Life 3, three silly, goofy questions that Gail has graciously agreed to answer. Are you ready?
I'm ready, even though I don't know what they are.
Okay, so just finish this sentence. When I want to look good, I make sure I...
Wear exactly the right outfit for the right occasion.
Okay, making sure you look good head to toe. I like that. All right, this is very interesting. Would you choose to be the worst player on a winning team or the best player on a losing team?
Huh. I'd say the worst player on the winning team.
Okay, why would you choose that?
I like to win.
You like to win. Okay, well, that's straightforward.
I like to win.
Okay, now we always love to find out what your fantasy name is, Gail. And that would be the very first pet you ever had and then the street you grew up on. So what would your name be?
Tracy Green.
Tracy Green. That just sounds like the girl next door. Hi, Tracy Green.
I know. Right. Yep, I grew up on Green Street.
And what was Tracy, a dog, a cat? What?
Tracy was a mouse, a pet mouse that I brought home from summer camp one summer.
Oh,
and my mother was not thrilled, but she let me keep it until one day it just died in his cage. But Tracy was my first pet.
I've never heard of anyone having a pet mouse. Remy, you had a pet mouse?
Yeah, I had a pet mouse named Bing.
Bing.
And same thing, he lasted Bing. Aww. Yeah, like Bing Crosby. He lasted for a couple of years, and then just one day, no more Bing. They're cute,
that's
though. They're fun little pets. Little pet mice are fun little pets.
They're cute.
So, Gail, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you or this book?
Okay. The book is on Amazon.com, and actually this coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, May 14th, 15th, and 16th, there's a free giveaway for the ebook, so you can download it for free. So if anyone's interested in that would be wonderful. And my website is GailBrenner.com, GailBrenner.com, and there is... 5 years worth of articles, audio, meditations, videos, and a way to contact me as well.
Oh.
I'd love to hear from any of your listeners.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Gail, for sharing your time and energy with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed it so much.